بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. This is our second session for what we have called the basic Arabic grammar review. And what we mean by that is that we're going to study in this class, we're going to review in this class basic Arabic grammar, yani fundamental rules of Arabic grammar. Most of what we're going to cover in this class, as we mentioned last week, are the yani important, very very important major grammatical rules that are found in the Medina Book 1. Yani most of the major rules that are found in Medina Book 1, we're going to cover in this review. Not everything that's in Medina Book 1, but rather the major rules that are found in it. Most of them, except a couple they left out. So, we're going to review them. That means that hopefully you're already familiar with them. But whatever you might not be familiar with, and maybe you missed it or whatever, then this is the time to catch it, okay? We're going to take our time and go through it carefully, and hopefully, yani, even if there's a rule that we come across that you're not familiar with, inshallah, you should be able to understand it. What we want to do, our normal procedure is that we're going to review what we had in the previous session, and we're also going to give you a chance to ask questions. Yani, primarily questions related to what we covered in the past. And in this case, we only had one class before this, right? So what we covered last week. Alaykum salam. Alright? So, last week, we read from the beginning of this, the handouts for Medina Book 1. Last week we read the parts of speech, the Arabic alphabet and vowels, and we briefly just looked at Arabic nouns have endings. Arabic nouns have endings. So as far as on the first page, it deals with the parts of speech, the 8 parts of speech in English, which we are not that concerned about. And then it deals with the parts of speech in Arabic language, which is what we are concerned about. And we said that the parts of speech in Arabic are 3. There are 3 parts of speech, 3 types or categories of words in Arabic. And under those 3 categories come the all of the 8 parts of speech that they have in English. Okay? So, let me just ask if somebody can name the 3 parts of speech in Arabic. What are the 3 parts of speech in Arabic? Naam, Abdul Karim.
Ismun, harfun,
fi'lun. Naam. Ismun, harfun, and fi'lun. Okay? Somebody else tell me, what is a ismun? What do we mean by ismun? Somebody else. Naam, akhi. What's your name?
Abu Bakr.
Abu Bakr, that's right. Abu Bakr. My memory is shot, akhi. Pardon me. It's been a while anyway since I've seen you, right? Naam, Abu Bakr. What do we mean by ismun? Okay, ism is a noun. By ism, we mean a noun. Now, we know in Arabic that ism also means name, right? Like somebody says, masmuka. Ma ismuka. Ism means a name, right? But here, we're talking about, in grammar, ismun means a noun. And the under nouns in Arabic come different types of words. They're common nouns, proper nouns, yani, possessive, yani, relative pronouns, possessive pronouns, adjectives, all of these things come under noun in Arabic, okay? So by noun, what do we mean? The first part of speech that we're looking at here is, what he said is ismun. Ismun means a noun. Walaykum salam. And under noun comes different types of words. Common nouns, proper nouns, adjectives, pronouns, and so on. Alright? The second part of speech that we mention is harfun. 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 What do we mean by harfun? Noun. A particle. Particle. What do we mean by particle? Like, somebody give me an example of a particle, Abdurrahman. Like a preposition. Another example of a particle, harf. Naam. Naam. Okay, what? Like the letter, wow. Yani a conjunction. Okay? And other conjunctions like wow is like fa. Yani fa is also a conjunction, thumma, like this. Okay? But by harf, we mean primarily prepositions and conjunctions, different types of particles. And the third part of speech that we mentioned is the fi'lun. Yes. Okay, so what is a fi'l?
A verb.
A verb, a verb. And somebody give me an idea, when we say verb, what do we mean by verb? Can anybody give us a brief definition of what is a verb? And in general terms, what do we mean by a verb? Naam, Mustafa.
Action word,
an action word. Yani an example of an action word. Like for example, In Arabic. Action word in Arabic. Naam. Kharaja. Daraba. Daraba. What does daraba mean? To hit or to strike. Naam. Kharaja means what? To exit, to go out. Another one? Sajada. Sajada. To prostrate. Naam. Another one? Jalasa. To sit. After that then, inshallah. After that then. Allahu Akbar. Allah. Allah. Bismillah, wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina.
Reason for being is to go with the main rules of Medina Book 1. But it would be good to re-familiarize ourselves with some of the vocabulary words as well. Because we'll be using those words in certain.
No doubt. But our objective, our purpose, our intent here is to study Arabic grammar. Our intent is not to necessarily learn a lot of vocabulary words, but hopefully it's necessary. As I said last week, in order for you to really understand the Arabic language and to be able to apply it, you have to do two things. You have to learn Arabic grammar and you have to memorize vocabulary words. One without the other is almost useless. If you don't know the grammatical rules, you can have a million words, but you don't know how to use them. You don't know how to put them in place. You don't know how they work with each other to understand what is intended by a certain word if you don't know grammar. And on the other hand, if you know all the grammatical rules, but you don't know the meaning of any of the words, so what? What will be the benefit? Okay? So you have to do that, but we're not going to spend a lot of time with vocabulary here. We'll see vocabulary words, and I'll ask you the meanings of words when we have examples and things like that. But you can go back to the Medina book and study the vocabulary lesson by lesson, as we have the vocabulary bank, the vocabulary from each lesson. You can go back and listen to it on audio, and you can read it. Naam, Abu Bakr.
Can I get a booklet,
please? A booklet, yes. Barakallahu fikum. Okay, so in the few moments that remain before we pray, we want to quickly review what we covered last week. Okay, so we started reviewing before the adhan, and we talked about the parts of speech, and we said that the parts of speech in Arabic are three, and they cover the eight parts of speech that are in English. And we said that those parts of speech, somebody said a ism, which is a noun, and somebody said a harf, which is a particle, like a conjunction or a preposition. And we also just talked about finally what? The fi'l, which is a verb. And each one of these things have details. Each one of these things has details. The types of particles, examples of particles, types of verbs, examples of verbs. Okay, there are past tense verbs and present tense verbs and imperative verbs, command form and so on. All of this, the details of it, some of it we may cover and some of it come at another level. But in any case, the point here is what? Just to understand that there are three primary, main, fundamental parts of speech in Arabic. Ismun, harfun, and fi'lun. You must know these three things. You have to memorize these three words in Arabic, and you have to know what they mean, and you should have examples to be sure that you understand what we're talking about. Because this is the fundamentals of the language. And if you understand this, you can build upon it. If you don't, then it will be like the person who builds the building, and without a foundation, a lot of decorations and beautifications and adornments, and it won't be long before the what? The building will collapse. Naam. Saeed? You have a question?
No.
Oh, Faiz.
What's the difference between fi'lun and fa'ilun?
Fi'lun and fa'ilun. Okay, we'll come to that, inshallah. I don't want to really get too sidetracked because, you know, the time is very limited, but I'll just write here. Yani fi'lun means a verb. Okay, that's an action word, a verb. And fa'ilun means the one who does the action, the subject, doer of the action of the verb. This is a verb, this is a noun. The fa'il, yani is a noun, okay? This is a verb. This is the action. This is the one who does the action. Okay, for example, an action like kataba, that's an action. He wrote. The one who does the action of writing is called fa, on the same pattern as fa'ilun katibun. Katibun. Fa'ilun katibun. From what? Kataba. It's from this verb. We get the noun, the one who does the action. Okay, this is a ism fa'il. Kataba means to write, yes, to write. And the katib is the one who writes, a writer. He's a katib, he's a writer. Okay? So the fa'il, yani, means the one who does the action.
So katib means a writer.
A writer, yes, that's right. Okay? So shariba means to drink, and sharibun means a drinker. Okay, like this. Okay, so as we said last week, we talked about these three parts of speech in Arabic. We said they are ismun, fi'lun, harfun. You have to memorize them, you have to know what they mean, and you need to have examples for each of them. After that, we talked about the Arabic alphabet and vowel signs. The Arabic alphabet. We said how many letters in the Arabic alphabet? How many letters? Letters? 29. And we said that 28 of them are what? Consonants. Consonants. Okay, a consonant means a letter that has a sound of its own. It has a sound. Okay, so one of the letters in Arabic is the letter Aleph. It doesn't have a sound of its own. It's not a consonant. Okay, so it's a letter, but it's not a consonant. Okay, so we said that there are 29 consonants, and I don't know if I mentioned last week, but it's not covered here in the book here, but those letters are divided into two groups. I think I mentioned it last week. The sun letters and the moon letters. Or the solar letters and the lunar letters. Yani al-huruf al-shamsiyya, sun letters. And al-huruf al-qamariyya, moon letters. And these are distinguished, especially yani at the time when you have alif-lam on a word. Then the lam, al, that lam is going to be pronounced with moon letters. Whereas with words that begin with sun letters, it's not going to be pronounced. Okay, this is a subject in itself. I don't want to go into detail now, but we just want to say, in terms of the Arabic alphabet, we should know that there are 14 sun letters and 14 moon letters. And the most important thing concerning them is that a word that begins with a moon letter, when it has L, you're going to say Al-Bait. Al-Bab. Huh? You're going to say Al-Walad. Al-Um, Al-Ab. But if the word begins with a sun letter, you're not going to pronounce the L. You're not going to say Al-Rahman. But you're going to say what? It's written, but it's not pronounced. You're going to say Ar-Rahman. Okay? You're not going to say Al-Shams. You're going to say Ash-Shams. You're not going to say Al-Samad. But you're going to say As-Samad, like this. Okay? So this is something that you just need to be aware of. This is covered, I think, in Lesson 4, Medina Book 1. If anybody wants to go back and look at it, and you can see it there in detail. Okay? The important thing is what? That the letters of the alphabet, there are 29. 28 of them are consonants. One of them, Aleph, is a letter. It's not a consonant. It doesn't have a sound of its own. It's used as a long vowel. You need to elongate fatha sound from A to A. And it's also used as a seat for Hamza. Yani, Aleph and Waw and Ya, these three letters are used as a seat for Hamza, and they're also used as long vowels. But as far as Waw and Ya, they are also consonants. Aleph is not. Okay, so be aware of this, that Aleph is a letter of the alphabet, it's not a consonant. It's used to elongate the sound of A, Fatha, and it's also used as a seat for Hamza. In which case, when a letter is used as a seat, it's not pronounced. Rather, the letter Hamza is pronounced with whatever vowel it has, or if it has sukun, it's a glottal stop. Okay, after this we said that the vowels are three in Arabic. We said that there are three vowels in Arabic, and we said that you have to know them, you have to memorize them, and you have to know how to use them. So what are the three vowels in Arabic? One of them. Fatha. Fatha. And I said that this word is spelled wrong here. It's spelled here F-A-T-A-H. It should be spelled F-A-T-H-A-H. Fatha. Okay, Fatha. And this way of writing it here throws off the pronunciation. So be careful, huh? It's Fatha. Fatha. Okay, so this is the first one. It's the sound of A, Fatha. Fatha. Or we can say, if we pronounce the last letter of the Tarmabutta, Fathatun. Fathatun. But we say, if we don't pronounce the ending, we say Fatha. Okay, the second vowel is what? Kasra. Okay, or Dhamma. Either one. Kasra or Dhamma, it doesn't matter which order. Kasra and Dhamma. Dhamma. And also, this word is spelled wrong here. And it's spelled D-U-M-M-A. It should be Dhamma, Dad, Fatha. D-A-M-M-A-H. Kasra, Fatha. And then, if there's no vowel, we also have what? A symbol that's used to represent the absence of vowel is called Sukun. Fatha, Kasra, Dhamma. Fatha is written above the letter. Kasra is written below the letter as a little slash. And Dhamma is a different symbol of its own. It has its own form. It's also written above the letter. These are the three vowels. Each one of these vowels can be elongated. And the fatha, if you want to elongate a word that has fatha, you follow it by alif. The kasra, if you want to elongate the sound of kasra, is followed by ya. And the dhamma, if you want to elongate, it's followed by wow. So it became a, e, and o. Okay, these are the three vowels and their elongation. And then there's some mention here further about the three parts of speech. The ism, fi'lun, and harfun. It says Arabic ism includes English nouns, pronouns, adjectives, and adverbs. So in English, these are four different categories of words, right? In Arabic, they all come under ism. Okay, and we will look at those things, some of it in detail and some of it in passing, and as you go along, you get more and more familiar with them. The Arabic word fi'lun is co-extensive with English verbs, meaning it has the same meaning of English verbs. It's an action word. Except that in Arabic, the action word, the verb in Arabic, it has to indicate action, and it also has to indicate time, past or present or future, and it also has to indicate within the verb itself the fa'il, the one that's doing the action. Yani the Arabic verb tells you who's doing the action. Unlike running, yani, who's running? Yani he is running, she is running, they are running, we are running, singular, dual, plural, masculine, feminine, all of that is indicated in the Arabic verb. So the Arabic verb not only indicates action, but it also indicates time, past or present or future, and it also indicates the doer of the action. Okay? Now. Huh?
Gender.
Now. Gender. Masculine or feminine? Now. Singular, dual, or plural? And then, yani, the last thing that we covered, yani, that we read completely last week on page 2 was that nouns may be indefinite or definite. Yani, either by using tanween or alif lam. Okay, so last week we mentioned this, and yani, as we go along, we'll also mention that nouns are not only definite or indefinite, they're also masculine, feminine, they're singular, dual, plural, they are case endings, yani, mansub, majroor, marfoon, all of these things about nouns we need to know. Yani, a noun can be definite, can be indefinite. Generally, alif lam indicates that it's definite, and tanween indicates that it's indefinite, generally speaking. But there are some exceptions to the rule. Sometimes the word is definite without alif lam. There are many cases of that. And sometimes the word has tanween and it's not indefinite. Okay, but generally speaking, yani alif lam indicates that a word is definite, and tanween indicates that it's not definite. So nouns are definite and indefinite in Arabic. Every noun is either definite or indefinite. And likewise, we can add to what they mentioned here concerning definite and indefinite. We can say that nouns are either masculine or feminine. Every noun is either masculine or feminine. Okay, there's no in between. It's either masculine, mudhakkar, or feminine, mu'annath. And every noun is either singular, dual, or plural. And in English, we have singular and plural. In Arabic, we have singular, dual, and plural. And every noun is either going to come under one of these categories, yani if it's mu'rab, of being marfoon or mansoob or majroor, or it could be mabniyun, yani fixed, its ending is fixed, it doesn't change, or it could be mamnu' min al-sarf. And mamnu' min al-sarf is a topic that these notes don't cover. So we're going to have to look at mamnu' min al-sarf from the Medina book, if we cover mamnu' min al-sarf. We're going to have to look in the Medina book, like this. These notes don't cover that, okay? So that's what we talked about last week, and then after that, I just read quickly, page 3, Arabic nouns have endings to show their function in a sentence. I read that quickly, just to give you a preview of it, and I hope that you went back and read it carefully, because this is what we're going to start with today after the Salat. Okay, so right now, it's almost time, yani for the Iqamah. We have a few minutes, 6 minutes or so. So we're going to stop here, we take a break. If anybody needs to make wudu, definitely we all need to take advantage of the time and pray some sunnah prayers. And then after the salat, we're going to start on page 3 with Arabic nouns have endings to show their functions in the sentence, inshaAllah. طيب بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. Okay, this is the second part of our second session for basic Arabic grammar, which is a review. As we mentioned last week and we mentioned earlier today, it's just a review of the most important grammatical points, or most of the important grammatical points from the Medina Book 1. Before the Salat, we reviewed what we covered last week. So whoever was here before the Salat, and the time that we started is at 12 o'clock, whoever was here, then inshallah, hopefully it was of some benefit to review what we covered last week, and primarily dealing with the parts of speech in Arabic, the three parts of speech, what they entail, examples of them, and the Arabic alphabet and voweling system. Okay, before we go on to read what we're going to cover today on page 3, which is Arabic nouns have endings to show their function in a sentence, before we start reading, does anybody have a question? Yani, does anybody have a question? Normally we're going to take questions at the beginning of the class at 12 o'clock. When we review, we're going to take questions then. So please, if you have questions, try to bring them in the beginning of the class. Otherwise, if you have a question at any time, we'll try to entertain it. Okay, anybody have a question right now concerning what we covered last week? Something that's not clear, or you're not sure about it, and you just want some confirmation. Anybody have a question? Don't hesitate to ask questions, please. Related to the topic. Related to the topic. None. Okay, if there are no questions, fine. Yes. Well, if a letter doesn't have a vowel, can you assume that it's sakin? Yani, if you're reading something that is voweled, right? All the words have vowels, and you don't see a vowel on a letter, then that means that it's sakin. That means it's, that's a letter that should have sukoon. But if there's no sukoon written above it, then, it means that, sukoon means the absence of a vowel. So if you don't see any vowel there, that's what it means. Yani, that it's sakin. Yani, in general, of course, it could be the person who wrote it, they forgot to put the vowel, right, or something like that. But in general, if everything is voweled and there's no vowel on the letter, that means that letter is sakin. Meaning it has sukoon, means it doesn't have a vowel sound. So that means in order to pronounce it, you have to pronounce it with the letter before it. The letter before it. You join them together into one syllable. Okay, any other question? Okay, let's look at the topic that we want to cover for today. At least this topic, and hopefully the next topic, the next page, inshallah, we'll cover for today. Inshallah. Okay. Arabic nouns have endings. What do we mean that Arabic nouns have endings? Meaning at the end of a word, right? At the end of a word, there's a vowel or a double vowel. This end, the last letter, what it ends with, that vowel, is what we're going to talk about today, right now. Arabic nouns have endings to show their function in the sentence. So this ending, whichever vowel it is, whether it's fatha, kasra, or dhamma, it tells us something about the function of that word in the sentence, in that sentence. And for example, in a sentence, you might have a subject and a predicate, okay? In English, they call it that. In Arabic, we say what? Mubtada'un and khabarun. Okay, the mubtada is from bada'a, the word that we begin the sentence with. It's the subject that we want to talk about. And the khabar means news or information. What we want to say about the word that we began with. So we have a sentence, right? The sentence is al-waladu, al-waladu ghaniyun. Why not? possible. Al-waladu ghaniyun. Okay, so al-waladu is the word that we're beginning the sentence with. Okay, that's our mubtada. Al-waladu. This is the subject that we want to talk about. The next word is what we want to say about the walad. What about the child, the boy? What do we want to say about him? That he is rich. This information that we want to give about the walad is called the khabar. The endings on the word tells you that this word, for example, these two words here, that they cannot be the object of a preposition. They cannot be the object of a verb. Huh? They cannot be the ism of inna or khabaru kana. Yani different words have different functions. We know that they cannot be those things. Why? Because those type of words end with kasra or end with fatha. And both of these words end with dhamma. So it tells us that what kind of words end with dhamma primarily are mubtada and a khabar. And there are other words that end with dhamma too. Yani the most important of them is the mubtada and a khabar in the nominal sentence, and the fa'il, the doer of action in a verbal sentence. If the sentence begins with a verb, it has to have a fa'il, the one who does the action. So the fa'il, like a mubtada and a khabar in a nominal sentence, the fa'il is also marfu'un. Yani marfu'un mean nominative case, it takes dhamma. So when we see that dhamma on the end of a word, it tells us that this word is either a mubtada, or it's a khabar, or it's a fa'il, or something like this. Okay, there are other options that it could be, but depending on what kind of sentence we're looking at, if it's a nominal sentence that begins with a noun, we're looking for a mubtada and a khabar. If it's a verbal sentence that begins with a verb, then we're looking for a fa'il. And maybe a maf'ulun bi. Yani the fa'il, the one who does the action, the maf'ulun bi, the object of the verb, that the action of the verb happened to. Okay? Okay, what is this mubtada, khabar, fa'il, all of this? Maybe you don't know what this is. Maybe it's not clear in your mind. That's not important right now. What's important right now is that there are different functions of words in sentence. It could be the subject, it could be the predicate, it could be the one that's doing the action. Okay, so depending on its function, that will determine its ending. Is it going to be a dhamma or a kasra or a fatha? That's what we want to know. We want to know that this ending tells us something. It's very important to know the ending of the word. The ending meaning its last vowel. Okay, if it's a dhamma or two dhammas, it has the same meaning. Okay, it has the same meaning. It means that it's marfu'un, nominative case. If it has kasra or two kasras, that means that it is genitive case. Okay, majroor. If it has a fatha, one fatha or two fatha, then that means accusative case, mansub. So these three things, these three case endings, the nominative, genitive, and accusative, is what we want to talk about now. Okay? Because knowing the case ending, or as we say in Arabic, we say the i'rab. In Arabic, you say the i'rab. The i'rab, yani of the word, tells us its function. What is this function in the sentence? The i'rab. I'rab, yani, this i'rab, yani, maybe we say, like here, I think they use the word case ending. Case ending. Okay, so the case endings means the i'rab. Yani, the function of the word being indicated by the last vowel at the end of the word. So, again, Arabic nouns have endings, meaning they have a vowel at the end of the word. It's, the ending is either going to be what? Fatha, kasra, or dhamma. That's what ending we're talking about. These endings show the function, show their functions in the sentence. Their function, is it the subject, is it the predicate, is it the one that's doing the action? Is it the object of a preposition? Yani the word that comes after a preposition, like to, or from, or on, yani ala or fi in, yani is it the object of a preposition or is it the object of a verb? Yani the boy broke the table. What's the object of a verb? Table. Yani the action of breaking happened to the table. The table was broke, right? Or you say the man drank the juice. Or water is better. Okay, water is better. Now, because juice, most of it is not juice anyway, right? It's just commercial. Okay, the man drank the water. The action of drinking happened to what?
Water.
The water. The water was drunk. Okay, that's the object of the verb. So we want to know, when we look at a sentence, what's the object of the verb in this sentence? What's the object of the preposition in this sentence? What's the subject of the sentence? We want to know this. And how we know it is by the ending of the word. The case ending, the i'rab. Does it take dhamma, kasra, or fatha? Okay, let's see what they said here. They said, I'm going to read now. Just like us, when we go to the office, to the bank, or to the factory for work, we have work clothes or uniforms. When we go to formal functions like weddings, walimas, or reception, we dress accordingly. When we are at home, we wear different clothes. And when we retire for the night to sleep, we put on sleeping dress. In short, we dress according to what the occasion or function demands. Similarly, the nouns have different endings to show their function in a sentence. Yani, they are comparing this what? The clothing that you wear for different occasions that's appropriate for the function or the occasion that you are attending. Well, likewise, words, depending on their function in the sentence, they dress accordingly. Meaning, they take dhamma, they take kasra, or they take fatha, according to their function at that particular time. The same word, in one place, could be the object of a verb. In another case, it could be the subject, the doer of the verb. It's possible, the same word, in one sentence has one function, in the next sentence has a completely different function. So when it's functioning as the doer of the action, it has to take dhamma. When it's functioning as the object of the action, then it has to take fatha. So it has to change its ending to what indicate its function in this particular sentence. We're going to look at some sentences and we'll see how words, yani, have different functions in different sentences. So similarly, the nouns have different endings to show their function in a sentence. It can be a subject, yani, in which case it would be in the nominative case, or marfu'un ending. Yani, the marfu' ending, in English they call the nominative case. And sometimes they say the subject or subjective case. Or it can be an object of a verb, yani, the thing that the action of the verb happened to. The thing that was drank or broken. Naam. In which case, in English they say the accusative case. In Arabic we say mansoob ending. And this one, sometimes the accusative case, they say the object or objective case, meaning the object of the verb, for example. Or it can be a possessor of a thing, yani the one that possess or owns something. Or come after a preposition or an adverb. And they call this the possessive case, or more generally they refer to it as genitive case. Yani, genitive case, the one that possess something. And in Arabic we say it is the majrurun ending. The last one that they mention here, the possessor of a thing, or it comes after a preposition or adverb, I don't know if this is clear to you. So I want to just give an example of what they mean by the possessor of a thing. In Arabic, or it coming after a preposition or an adverb, in which case it would be in the genitive case. Okay, the possessor of a thing. The one that possessed something. What kind of example can we give in Arabic for this, the one that possessed something? And I'll give you a hint, if we use the idafa. Naam, jayid, ahsan. Baytullahi. Here, the possessor, the owner of the house, is Allah. The possessor, right? So in this case, the possessor, the word that is the possessor in the sentence, is going to be in the genitive case. Or as we say in Arabic, majroor, and therefore it takes kasra. Therefore it takes kasra. This is what they mean by the possessor. This is one. The second one they said, or it may come after a preposition. So give me an example of a word that comes after a preposition. Small sentence, simple, easy sentence that has a preposition. Naam, dhukri. Okay, fi al-bayt, I'll put alif lam just for ease. Fil Bayti. Okay, this is a preposition, and I'll just put one more word here just to complete the sentence, so it'll be a complete sentence. Fil bayti waladun. In the house is a boy. In the house is a boy. Fil bayti, here the word bait is following fi. And fi is a preposition. So the word that follows a preposition is always going to be, like the word that is the possessor in a construct phrase, it's always going to be majroor. Yani in the genitive case with kasra. Okay? Then they said, or it may be following a dharf, an adverb. An adverb. In Arabic, an adverb is a dharf. So give me an example, a small sentence of a word that follows a dharf, an adverb in Arabic. Huh? Huh? Tayyib. Let's say al-kitab, the book is underneath, tahta. Tahta al-maktab. Tahta al-maktabi. Here, the word tahta means underneath. Means underneath. This word, tahta, is an adverb. It indicates position. Yani something is under, above, in front of, behind, to the right or the left. It indicates the position. This is an adverb. Okay? So the word that follows an adverb is also always going to be in the genitive case, yani majroor with kasra. So what they mean here is that words have different functions in sentences. And the last example they gave us is for the genitive case. They said it may be the possessor of a thing, as in an idafa construction, the one who owns the house, Baytullah, or it may be a thing comes after a preposition, as in here, and fi bayt, fil bayti waladun, in the house there is a boy, comes after a preposition, fi is a preposition, or it may come after an adverb, and here this is an adverb, tahta or fawqa, amama, khalfa. Any in front of, behind, these are words that show position, and these are adverbs, and the word that comes after an adverb is always, we say it is mudafun ilayhi majroor with kasra. After a preposition, we say it is the ism, yani ism majroor, the noun that comes after a preposition makes it majroor. Okay, so these are some of the common situations in which a word might be majroor. And we're going to look at sentences later, and we're going to look at details, different types of sentences, especially the nominal sentence, in which we're going to see prepositions, and we're going to see idafa constructions, we're going to see adverbs, we're going to see all these things. But just for clarification, when they say here that a word might be the possessor of something, they mean like in an idafa construction, where you have yani the mudaf and the mudaf ilay, meaning the one that possessed something. Huh? The owner of something, or the possessor of something. Or it may follow a preposition, or it may follow an adverb. And the details of this we will see as we go through these notes. But now, just as an introduction, we just want to have some kind of idea what they are saying when they say a word might be yani marfoon in the nominative case, the subject of the sentence, or it might be majroor in the genitive case, and it's following a preposition or adverb, or it's the possessor of something, or it may be in the accusative case, mansoob. And for example, if it is the object of the verb. And there are other cases in which it can be mansoob also. Some of those details in another level, and some of them we'll look at here, inshallah. Okay, so this is basically telling us what? That nouns in Arabic have endings. We call them case endings, or they're i'rab. And these endings help us to determine the function of that word in that particular sentence. Again, in one sentence, it might be in the genitive case. In another sentence, it might be in the nominative case or accusative case, depending on its function in each sentence. Its case ending or i'rab is going to change, and therefore its vowel is going to change. All right, I hope that that's clear. If it's not clear, please don't hesitate to ask me to give another example or give further clarification, because this is so fundamental and so important that if you miss this, you will be suffering for the rest of your studies in Arabic if you don't understand this. You know, Ashkurullah.
Out of the three examples you gave, the third one was so clear to me. Just like
Baytullahi.
I have an example on my head, Kitabul Imami, the book of Imam.
Okay.
So I do not understand the first two.
The first one, yani the possessor?
Mm-hmm. No, not the possessor. The nominative and accusative.
Nominative and accusative. Oh, okay. All right. In other words, he's saying that the genitive case, the examples that we gave here make it clear. You understand them. But the first two, the nominative and accusative. Okay, we're going to talk about them in detail as we go along, but let me just try to give you a couple of examples. Okay, as far as nominative, the first example that I wrote here is example of a nominal sentence. Nominal sentence. Yani in Arabic it's called a jumla ismiya. Nominal sentence means it begins with a noun. The noun that it begins with is called al-mubtada'u. The word that we begin with. The next word is the information that we want to tell you about the mubtada. Both of these words in Arabic are in the nominative case. How do we know that they're in the nominative case? Because nominative case takes dhamma. Nominative case always takes dhamma. It could be a single dhamma as here because it has alif lam. Or it could be a double dhamma in this case because there's no alif lam. Okay, but as long as there's dhamma, that means it's nominative. Nominative, generally speaking, they say, in some of the English grammar books, they say the subject. Subjective case. Subject. But in Arabic, the nominative case is not just used for the subject. It's also used for the predicate. It's also used for the one who does an action in a verbal sentence. And if you said, كَتَبَ الطَّالِبُ الواجبات. Kataba, that's an action, writing. Who did the action? At-talibu did the action. Al-wajibat is the object of the action. What was written? The homework. The student wrote the homework. In this case here, kataba at-talibu, let me write it here. Kataba at-talibu. كتب الطالب الواجبات. كتب الطالب الواجبات. Here we see that الطالب ends with dhamma because the one who did the writing, the student, wrote the homework. The one who did the writing is the fa'il, and the fa'il, like the mubtada and khabar, the fa'il in Arabic is always marfu'un. And just like the subject and the predicate, the fa'il is always in Arabic marfu'un, takes dhamma, nominative case. So these are three examples of the nominative case. The subject of a sentence, the predicate of a sentence, and the fa'il in a sentence. This is a nominative sentence, subject and predicate, and this is a verbal sentence that begins with a verb. And that verb has to have a fa'il, the one who did the action. And the one who does the action of the verb is called fa'il. It's always marfu'un with dhamma. Now there are other cases in which a word can be in the nominative case. There are many cases. Okay, these are the primary ones that we will see at this level. The subject, the predicate, and mubtada and khabar, and the fa'il. This is the primary ones that we will see in this level here. So what we mean by nominative case, we mean that a word is going to end with dhamma. And that dhamma tells us it has one of these various different functions. There are different functions that come under nominative case. One of them is the subject, another of them is the predicate, and another of them is the fa'il. These are functions that come under the nominative case. So when we see a word in a sentence, if it's a nominal sentence, we're looking for the mubtada and khabar. If it's a verbal sentence, we're looking for the fi'il and the fa'il, the verb and the doer of the verb. That's what we're looking for. So these are three things that show us three functions for nouns in Arabic that come under the nominative case. And those words that come under the nominative case, as we learn them, as we go along, when we look at the nominal sentence, which we will take after we finish talking about this topic, we're going to look at the nominal sentence. And we're going to see the mubtada and the khabar, and we're going to have a lot of examples. And then you'll know that these two functions, the mubtada and the khabar, come under nominal case. And therefore they're always going to take dhamma. A single dhamma or a double dhamma. And it will be a single dhamma if it has alif lam, right? If a word has alif lam, it can't take tanween. If it doesn't have alif lam, then normally it's going to have a double dhamma in the nominative case, okay?
That sentence, kataba talibu
al-wajibat.
That is a jumla ismiya or
Well, a sentence that begins with a noun is a jumla ismiya, ism. And a sentence that begins with a verb is a jumla fi'liya, because it begins with a fi'l. Huh? There's a fi'l. This is the fi'l. This is the fi'l. This is the fi'l. Kataba is the fi'l, and talibu is the fi'l. It's good? Naam.
This is
a fa'il. A talibu is the fa'il, the one that's doing the action of the verb.
In the next sentence, there's no
fa'il. There's no fa'il. This is a jumla ismiya. A nominal sentence doesn't have a fa'il. It has a mubtada and a khabar. Yani the components of a nominal, we're going to study that in the next topic on the next page, okay? But anyway, just have some kind of idea that there's two basic kinds of sentences in Arabic. There's the nominal sentence and there's the verbal sentence. The nominal sentence, we're looking for a subject and a predicate, mubtada and khabar. The verbal sentence, we're looking for fi'l and fa'il, the verb and the doer of the action. And maybe there's an object of the action also. Not always, but sometimes. Now.
So in other words, that jumla, which is something is doing in that jumla, so we will call that jumla
fi'liya. If it begins with the fi'l, we say jumla fi'liya.
And those jumla which is describe something about that thing, so that's called a jumla ismiya.
It's not because we're describing something, it's because we begin with the ism.
Okay.
If the sentence begins with a noun, ism, then we say jumla ismiya. If it begins with a verb, fi'l, then we say jumla fi'liya. It depends on what word the sentence begins with. If it begins with a noun, it's a nominal sentence. Begins with a verb, it's a verbal sentence. Depends on what it begins with. Because in a verbal sentence, we might also describe something. But if it begins with a verb, then we call it a verbal sentence. And even a nominal sentence could have a verb coming later on in the sentence. But if it begins with a noun, we call it a nominal sentence. Because it begins with a noun. That's the key. The sentence begins with a noun or a verb. If it begins with a verb, it's a verbal sentence. If it begins with a noun, it's a nominal sentence. I hope that's clear. Yani, the two types of sentences in Arabic are determined by which word the sentence begins with. Either it begins with a noun, or it begins with a verb. That's what determines what kind of sentence it is. If it begins with a verb, it's a verbal sentence. If it begins with a noun, it's a nominal sentence. That's the point of this topic right now on this page, is to let us know that the ending of words tells us their function.
Wherever the word is in the sentence, whether it's in the beginning,
whether it becomes in the beginning, middle, or end, that vowel on the end is going to tell us something about its function.
Number two, you said that if we don't know this, we'll be lost.
I mean that if you don't understand that case endings tell you, indicate, help you to understand the function of a word. But when you look at a sentence, you won't know, am I supposed to understand this word as the subject of the sentence? Or is it the predicate? Or is it the fa'il? Or is it the object of a verb? You don't know what its function, so how will you know if a person is saying, Ahmed hit Muhammad, or Muhammad hit Ahmed? How will you know? Which one did the hitting and which one was hit? By the ending of the verb. The word that ends with Dhamma is going to be the one who did the hitting. The one that ends with Fatha is going to be the one that was hit.
Of course, in English, this is...
No, English is miskeen. Okay. English doesn't tell you anything. You're stupid when you're reading English. Arabic is crystal clear. It's meticulous. It makes you to know everything exactly what is intended by the speaker or the writer. English doesn't do that. Okay? English doesn't do that. We're going to talk about that in the next topic. But, honey, we have to sometimes mention something that we didn't reach yet just to give an example. But don't worry about what we didn't cover yet. Honey, just understand the concept here of what the endings of words tell us their function. That's what's important to understand here. As far as jumla ismiya and jumla fi'liya, we're going to come to them. We're going to come to a topic of jumla ismiya next. We're going to come to a fi'liya after. Okay, we'll come to those and we'll talk about them in detail. Now, what is important, words have... Yani endings, or i'rab, And those endings tell us something about the function of the word in that particular sentence.
And just one more thing. If we refer back to the Medina book, like these terms, we can see it in the meaning.
Yeah, I mean, you can find some of these terms in the English key of the Medina book. Yeah, and wherever they came up, where the topic came up in the book, then you'll find some of these terms.
Like now, you said in the last lesson, it's good to know. You have to know.
Yeah, but these terms here, you don't need to go to the Medina book, look for them. They're right here on this page right here. These three terms, marfu and mansub and majrur, on this page right here. Okay, what I want you to know today is what's on this page. As far as any extra, somebody asks a question about something else, don't worry about it. Okay, what I want you to worry about is what's on this page. If you know what's on this page, then you're good. If you know what's on the page before this that we had last week, that there are three parts of speech, ism, fi'l, harf, that's what you need to know. And if you know that there are 29 letters in the Arabic alphabet and that there are three vowels, fatta, kasra, that's what you need to know, what's on this paper. As far as what's not on this paper, don't worry so much about it. That means that that may be something that we come into, that's going to be on another paper that we're going to come to, but we didn't get to it yet. Alright? But what's on this paper, that's what you are responsible for. Anything extra is just extra. It's just extra. And as long as the boss gives you your full salary, you're good, right? If he gives you extra, you accept it. But if you don't get the extra, you don't have no complaint. Right? So if you get here what's on this page, you're good. Don't complain. Yani just yani be content that you got your full what was due to you. Now, now, when you're reading, you should pronounce the last vowel on the end of a word. In normal Arabic speech, they don't normally pronounce the last vowel. When they stop on a word, they don't pronounce the last vowel. But us, for learning purposes, we have to always pronounce the last vowel on every word. In the beginning, middle, and end of the sentence. No matter if we stop or pause, I want to hear the vowel, because this is the only way you're going to train yourself to recognize what that vowel should be and what does it mean. And when we further down, when we come to yani grammatical analysis of sentences, yani i'rab of sentences, that's what it's going to be all about. I'm going to ask you, what is the function of this word in this sentence? And you're going to have to tell me that this word is a subject. Yani the sign that it's the subject is that it ends with dhamma. So it's in the marfu'un case. And this is the sign that proves it, and this is its function. All I want you to explain. When we look at a sentence, we're going to explain every single word, what is its function. And the only way you're going to know that is if you know yani what is majrur and mansub and marfu'un, and what is the sign that indicates that a word is marfu'un, dhamma.
So the case ending will tell us exactly.
The case ending tells us that it has to be one of these few options. It has to be one of these, because the only thing that can be marfu'un are these items here. For now, there are three for us. There may be more later on, but for now, there are three: the subject, the predicate, and the doer of the action. That's all. Anything that you see is going to be one of them if it has a dhamma. Okay? Now. Now. No, it's not a mudaf construction. It's not a mudaf. This is a fi'l, this is a fa'il, this is the object of the verb. This is the object of the verb. Yeah, the object, the one that the action occurred to. What was it that was written? The homework was written. Don't worry about it. It's not majrun, it's mansub. But don't worry about that. That's advanced. We didn't get to that yet, okay? This word right here is a sound feminine plural. Sound feminine plurals, when they are mansub, they take kasra, not fatha. But that's advanced. We didn't get to that yet, okay? When we come to that, we'll talk about that in detail, inshallah. For now, don't worry about that word. That's why when I'm explaining it, I'm leaving this word out. I'm just explaining this is the fa'il, this is the fa'il. Don't worry about that word. Okay, we can change it to some other words so it'll be easier to see. Now,
so just to make sure, whenever the subject and the predicate would always have the same ending.
That's right.
Vowel.
Subject and predicate always have the same ending vowel, dhamma. They always have dhamma.
Okay.
Now, I should mention here that in the advanced levels, you will come to know that there are the signs at the end of a word that tells you its case ending. There are primary signs, which are what we are discussing at this level, fatha, kasra, and dhamma. And then there are secondary signs. Yani there are special types of words that have different signs that indicate that it's nominative, genitive, or accusative. That's in advanced level. Okay, when we come to that, then we'll learn the secondary signs. For now, we just need to know the primary signs. Don't worry about secondary signs for now, okay? This is a secondary sign. That's why I don't want to deal with that. And we're not going to deal with that until a long time from now. Alright? So, these are the primary signs. If you learn the primary signs well, when you come to secondary signs, you build on what you have here. So it's important to know this. It's important to know that the ending of the word tells you which category it comes under in terms of its possible functions. And if it comes under marfu'un, for now it has to be the subject of the sentence, the mubtada, or it has to be the khabar, the predicate, or it has to be the doer of the action in a verbal sentence. For now, that's all it's going to be. If you see dhamma, it has to be one of these three functions. So if it's a verbal sentence, it has to be the fa'il. If it's a nominal sentence, it has to be the mubtada or the khabar. Usually, most of the time, the mubtada is the word you're going to begin with, and the khabar is going to come after it, most of the time. The order could be reversed with special rules, but we'll come to them when we come to them. Alright? So here, let me also say that the rules that we're learning, okay, these are what? Basic Arabic grammar. There's no doubt that there's advanced Arabic grammar, in which we get more rules, detailed rules, exceptions to rules, right? Don't worry about that now. For now, just worry about the basic rules. If we understand the basic rules well, then you'll be able to build on them. You'll have a strong foundation that you can build upon, and it will make things easy. And that's really the purpose of this course now, is for us to strengthen our foundation. We don't want to go to the next level and the foundation is not strong. Then we do a lot of work building the second level, right? And the building collapses. That's what we're trying to avoid. Alright, let's read. There are three endings of nouns. Okay, after the first paragraph, before these big three words, Dhamma, Fatha, and Kasra, 1, 2, and 3, it says there are three endings of noun. There are three endings of nouns. The vowel sign on the last letter of the noun. The endings of nouns, we mean by that what? The vowel sign on the end of the noun. What are these three signs or three endings? They are Dhamma, Fatha, and Kasra. Each of these words end with ta marbuta. Yani each of these three words, dhamma ends with ta marbuta, fatha ends with ta marbuta, and kasra ends with ta marbuta. That being said, they give us some examples here. For dhamma, from the right side of the page, right? It says al kitabu. And then it says what? Kitabun. Okay, what's the difference here? One is definite, one is indefinite. One is ma'rifa, one is nakira. Okay, we'll come to these words, ma'rifa and nakira. The Arabic technical terminology is important to learn. What's more important is to understand how it functions, but if you're really serious about studying Arabic, then you got to learn the technical language. Okay? Because if you're a pharmacist and you don't know the doctor's terminologies, right? You're not going to do well. You're not going to do well. You have to learn the technical language. Huh? Alright? So if you really want to learn Arabic, you have to learn the technical language. Okay? Okay, so the first thing they gave us here is Al-Kitabu and then Kitabun. Al-Kitabu has Alif Lam. So it cannot have Tanween on the end. Kitabun has tanween, therefore it cannot have alif lam. Okay? Al kitabu is definite, the book. Kitabun is indefinite, a book. But they both end with what? Dhamma. They both end with dhamma. One has two dhammas, one has one dhamma. But the point is what? They end with dhamma. The case ending is in reference to not how many dhammas, but that there's a dhamma. Or kasra or fatha. Doesn't matter if it's one or two. Okay? The one or two help us to understand is it definite or indefinite, generally speaking. But what's important here in terms of case endings is what is its vowel, not is there a double one or a single. What's important is it dhamma, is it fatha, or is it kasra. Okay, so they give us these examples. Al-kitabu kitabun. Muhammadun. It's marfu'un with dhamma. Al-babu and babun. Al babu means what? The door. And babun means a door. So we know that one of them is definite. Al babu has alif lam, and the other one is indefinite. Babun, a door. Tanween. Okay? Generally indicates that a word is indefinite. Alif lam indicates that a word is definite. Naam. The second line, fatha. F-A-T-H-A-H. The first H is the letter ha, as in jim, ha, and kha. The second H is ta marbuta. And that's why the second one, normally we're not pronouncing it, but it's pronounced like a soft H sound. Fatha, ha. And the H on the end is not fully pronounced, unless you put a vowel on it, okay? Fatha. But the first one is ha, and the second one is ta marbuta, that's pronounced like a regular H. Like at the end of the alphabet. Here they give us these words. Al-kitaba. That's a fatta. Kitaban. That's two fattas. That means that this fatta indicates that the case ending is going to be the accusative case. Or mansoob. Yani here. The mansoob means accusative case. Yani it's indicated by A. Or fatha sound. So they have al-kitaba and kitaban, Muhammadan, al-baba and baban. Al-baba is definite and baban is indefinite. Tayyib. The third one, kasra, al-kitabi. This is the genitive case. Genitive case in Arabic is what? Majrurun. It's indicated by the kasra, I ending. Al-kitabi and kitabin. Both of them are majrur, genitive case, because they both end with kasra. Even though one has a single kasra, the other one has a double kasra. Muhammadin. It's majrur with kasra. Al-babi, majrur with kasra. Babin, majrur with kasra. So these are cases of what? They are showing us that the vowel on the end of a word can be single or double, doesn't matter. As long as it's dhamma, single dhamma or double dhamma, it's all the same. It means that it is marfu'un, nominative case. If it ends with kasra, it means it's majrurun, genitive case. If it ends with fatta, it means it's mansubun, accusative case. Is that clear? Yani that the vowel on the end, whether it's a single vowel or double vowel, it's the same. Single vowel or double vowel is the same. Doesn't matter. Yani if it has dhamma, then it is marfu'un. If it has kasra, it's majrur. And if it has fatta, it is mansub. Okay, these are examples they gave. I wanted to give some more examples, but let's go on because I want to at least finish this page today, even if we don't do the nominative senses. After this it says, number one, when the last letter of a noun has a dhamma, it is said to be marfu'un. It indicates nominative case. And they give us three sentences as examples. Please look at these sentences carefully from the right to the left, keeping in mind, these are intended to be examples of words that are in the nominative case or marfu'un. Okay? They're in the nominative case. And in other words, it means that they are going to be the subject, the doer of the action of a sentence that begins with a verb, or they're going to be the subject or the predicate of a sentence that begins with a noun. One or the other. These words can be masculine, they can be feminine. They can be definite, they can be indefinite. But what's important is what? The ending. That's what we're looking at. We're not so concerned. We'll get examples of words that are masculine. And examples of words that are feminine. Examples of words that are definite and words that are indefinite. But what is important here in this subject is what? The ending. The vowel at the end of the word which indicates its i'rab or case ending. Is it nominative, genitive, or accusative? I hope it's clear. Okay, these are examples they give us. For the nominative case, or marfu'un, they say, ذَهَبَ مُحَمَّدٌ إِلَى السُّوقِ. ذهب محمد. This is the shahid here. This is the word that we want to look at. ذهب محمد إلى السوق. What does this mean? Muhammad went to the marketplace. ذهب is the verb, right? So this is a verbal sentence. In a verbal sentence, we're looking for the فاعل, the one who's doing the action. So who did the action of going to the marketplace in this sentence? Muhammad. So the فاعل, we said, is always مرفوعٌ. The one who does the action of a verbal sentence is always going to be مرفوعٌ. ضمة, nominative case. ذهب محمدٌ إلى السوق. Second sentence. حامدٌ طالبٌ مجتهدٌ. حامدٌ, what about حامد? This is a, what kind of sentence? Does this begin with a verb or a noun? Okay, it begins with an ism, a noun, so it's a ismiya, a jumla ismiya, a nominal sentence. And we said that in a nominal sentence, what we're looking for is the subject and the predicate. The subject and the predicate, the mubtada and the khabar. And both subject and predicate are always going to be marfu'un, nominative case with dhamma. So we have hamidun, talibun, mujtahidun. What is the meaning? Hamid is a student. What kind of student? Hardworking, diligent student. Okay, in this sentence, the first part of the sentence is the core of the sentence. Hamidun talibun. That's a complete sentence. Hamid is a student. Hamid is the mubtada, subject, and talibun is the khabar, predicate. Mujtahidun is an adjective describing what kind of student he is. That's extra. But without the adjective, we have a full sentence. Hamid is a student. Alright? Here, what you want to know is that the subject and the predicate, the mubtada and khabar, both are always marfu'un. Okay, in these first two examples, we have all three situations that we need to know now about marfu'un. It's either the subject or the predicate, as in this second sentence, or it's the fa'il, the doer of the action, in the first sentence. These three things are always marfu'un, meaning they're always in the nominative case. They're always going to have dhamma, single dhamma or double dhamma. No matter if they're masculine or feminine, no matter if they're definite or indefinite, they're going to have dhamma, because that's what we're concerned about, the ending. Alright? Third sentence. Aminatu bintun jamilatun. Okay, what kind of sentence is this? Is it a nominal sentence or a verbal sentence? It's a nominal sentence, ismiya, begins with a noun, an ism. Okay? Aminatu is the mubtada, the subject. What do we want to say about her? Bintun, she's a girl. She's a what? A girl. That's the, yani that is a complete sentence there. Amina is a girl. That's a subject and a predicate, a mubtada and a khabar. Amina is a girl. Here, the last word is the extra word describing what kind of girl? Jamilatun. What kind of girl she is? Beautiful girl. She's a beautiful girl. Amina is a beautiful girl. The subject and the predicate here are both taking dhamma. Amina has a single vowel and bintun has a double vowel. We don't want to go into the details of that for now, but the reason why Amina has a single vowel is because Amina is a proper noun and feminine proper nouns don't take tanween. Okay, but what's important is not it has a single or double vowel. What's important is, what is the vowel? Is it dhamma, kasra, or fatha? Here's dhamma, that means it's marfu'un, nominative case. In this case, it's the word that the sentence begins with. It's the mubtada. The second word is the khabar, the predicate. What you want to say about her? She's a girl. And the third word is an adjective describing what kind of girl, a beautiful girl. Is it clear?
Yes.
Tayyib. What we are concerned about here, what? Is that these words that end with dhamma, it tells us they all are in the nominative case. In Arabic, it's called what? Marfu'un. Okay? Okay, second one. Second one says, when the letter, the last letter of a noun has a fatha. Fatha. It is said to be mansubun. It indicates accusative case. It indicates accusative case. Mansubun. Now we're going to look at words when they're in the accusative case. Yani words in the accusative case, this case here is the case of words that we might not be familiar with, accusative case, okay? So don't worry so much about the examples, but worry about what? The ending. The ending, single fatha or double fatha tells us that it's the accusative case. In Arabic it's called mansoob. These two words you have to learn. Yani the words that end with fatha, in Arabic it's called mansoob. You have to know this word. In English it's called the accusative case. These are the examples that they gave us. Ra'aytu Muhammadan fis-suqi. Ra'aytu Muhammadan fis-suqi. Ra'aytu means I saw. Muhammad is a name, proper noun. Fi is a preposition in. As-suq means the marketplace. The object of the preposition. Fi, preposition. As-suq, object of the preposition. So the meaning of this sentence, Ra'aytu Muhammadan, I saw Muhammad, fis-suqi, in the marketplace. What is important here is that Muhammad, the word Muhammad, in the previous line we had Zahaba Muhammadun with Dhamma, and now we have Ra'aytu Muhammadan with Fatha. Huh? Same word, but in the first sentence Muhammad is the fa'il, do of the action, it has to take Dhamma. In this sentence it's the object of the action, that Muhammad is the one who was seen. So the object of the action has to be in the accusative case with fatha. Same word, but has a different function in this sentence than the previous one. Is it clear? It's the same word, but here has a different function, so it has to change its ending, right? Or as the example they gave us, right? Change clothing for the occasion. Here what? We have to change the ending because of its different function in this sentence than from the previous sentence. In this case, it's the object of the verb. In Arabic, it's called the maf'ulun bi. Don't worry about that expression. It's not necessary to know that at this point. But in any case, it's called the maf'ulun bi. It's the object of the verb. And the object of the verb, the word that the action falls upon, is always going to be in the accusative case, or in Arabic, mansub. Second example they gave us, kam dularan indaka. Kam dularan indaka. The meaning of this sentence is, how many dollars are with you? How many dollars do you have? Literally, how many dollars are with you? Kam dularan indaka. Here, in this sentence, the word that we're looking at is dularan. Kam dularan. Dularan, we see that its ending vowel is what? What is the ending vowel? Fatha. And fatha tells us that its case is the accusative case. In Arabic, it's called mansoob. Why is it in the accusative case here? Don't worry about it. It's because it's tamyiz. It's the word that explains. After kam, there's a word that, when you say how many or how much, you want to know how many what. So the word that comes after kam, how many, tells you what you're talking about, that you're asking how many or how much. Okay, that word is called the tamyiz. It's always in the accusative case. Yani the tamyiz of this kind of come anyway is in the accusative case. It takes fatha. That is a little bit more advanced for us. Don't worry about it. But what you need to know what is that the function here as a tamyiz coming after the word come requires that it be in the accusative case. And how do we know it's in the accusative case? Because its last vowel is fatha. And the last example they gave us is this expression that we're familiar with, but we might not know grammatically how to explain it. Yani ashhadu anna. Anna was shadda on the noon, double noon, and a short vowel, not anna. Because some people say, ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah. This is a mistake. Elongating this vowel means that I bear witness that I am Muhammad, the Messenger of Allah. And that's not what we want to say, right? We want to say anna with a short vowel, Muhammadan, yani abduhu wa rasuluhu. So ashhadu means I bear witness, anna means that, Muhammadan, that Muhammad, that's a name, right? Is abduhu, his abd, his worshipper, slave servant, wa rasuluhu, and his messenger. What's important in this sentence is that the word that comes after anna, it's called ism anna, is always mansub. In the accusative case, it has to take fatha. Okay, why is it ism anna, and what does all of that mean? That's advanced. Don't worry about it. It's just an example, and we need to know that this word takes fatha, yani because it's mansub. Naam. Fadl. We need to know that because yani it is in the mansub case, it has to take fatah. So we see that yani in these three examples, the word Muhammad and the word Dullah yani has a certain ending, because in each of these sentences, these words are in the accusative case, they are mansub. Because of their function in this particular sentence, it has to take fatah. And the last one they give us is when the last letter of a noun has a kasra, it is said to be majrurun. It indicates genitive case. And they give us yani some examples here, yani of words that end with kasra. And when a word ends with kasra, we say that this is the genitive case. In Arabic, it's called what?
Majrur.
Whoever doesn't know these three words, marfu'un, mansubun, and majrurun, you must learn them. Mandatory. There's no escape. It's just three words. Learn one word every 2 days, and when you come back next week, we're going to give you a test. You have 2 days to memorize one word. That should be easy enough, right? Every day, memorize one of them, practice them in the rest of the week, and come back with these three words. Mansub, marfu', and majrur. And know what they mean. And yani, know that the indication that a word is marfu' is that it ends with a certain vowel, dhamma. The indication that a word is majrur is that it ends with a certain vowel, kasra. And so on, like this. That's what you need to know. What does this word mean in English, in Arabic? And what vowel indicates that case ending? Naam.
Okay. I have a question about genitive.
Naam. In some of the English grammar books, they say possessive. The possessive case.
I wanted to ask you that because we know the Arabic word.
Yeah.
Genitive.
Yeah, this is a problem, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's no problem. It's not a major problem, but if you want to know, okay, in English, I don't know what accusative means. I don't know what nominative means. I don't know what genitive means. That's probably what some people are saying right now. Okay, in English it's genitive. What does that mean?
Right.
Well, some of the Arab English grammar books say it means possessive. Yani, like we give the example here. Yani, Baytullah. Allah owns the house. Yani, the Kaaba and the Masajid in the earth are the buyut of Allah. Allah owns them. They belong to Allah, right? Everything in the heaven and the earth belongs to Allah. But this is special. It means that these are special places. Allah has singled them out, right? So, here they say genitive. In some of the English grammar books, they say possessive. Nominative. In some of the books, they say subjective. The subject. Accusative, they say objective. The object.
Can you say that one more time?
Now, they say for majrur, yani genitive case, they say possessive. Possessive. And for marfu'un, they say, yani, subject, subjective, subject. And for accusative case, they say, object, objective. And it's the object. Yani, objective case, possessive case, and subjective case.
That actually helps.
Okay, if that helps a little bit, alhamdulillah.
Yeah.
But of course, when we go to Arabic, yani, that will be applicable, but it will be wider than that. It will include more than just the object or the subject or the possessor.
That's right. Can I say something? I used to think
the same way. Yeah.
About trying to
understand the Arabic language terminology better. Okay, but I'm saying some people may be different. Everybody has a different way of learning, yani. I'm more concerned that you learn the Arabic expression and how it functions. But since these English words are mentioned, we'll just mention them for that. He's saying it's better, don't worry about the English. And I'm saying, the English is not so important for us. But if you, yani, if you want to refer it to something, you have to refer it back to English, right? So, I mean, what's important is to understand how does it function in Arabic, that's what's important. If you know the Arabic expression, and you know how it functions, alhamdulillah, you'll be able to read, and write, and speak, and understand Arabic properly, because you'll know how it works. But, yani, whatever works for you, inshallah, then this is what we're going to go with. Okay, the last, this is the last one, and we're going to stop here with this. Yani, the third one is kasra. It indicates the genitive case or majrur. And they give us some examples here. They said, hadha kitabu Muhammadin. Okay, we said the genitive case is possessive, right? So they're giving the example of possession. Hadha Kitabu Muhammadin. This is the book of Muhammad. This is the book of Muhammad, meaning Muhammad's book. Okay, this is showing possession. So the book of Muhammad, who is the possessor? Muhammad. What is he possessing? The book. The book is possessed, it's owned by Muhammad. The book of Muhammad. Okay, so they're showing you this example, how genitive case means possessive case, showing possession. But they also said that the genitive case also includes the word that comes after a preposition, or the word that comes after an adverb, right? So we also want to look at examples for that, right? Okay, second example, as-sa'atu 'ala as-sariri. The watch is on the bed. 'Ala is the preposition. And the word that comes after a preposition is always going to be majrur, genitive case. The word that comes after a preposition is always majrur, genitive case. So the watch, as-sa'atu, 'ala, is on or upon as-sariri, the bed. Okay? 'Ala is the preposition and as-sarir is the noun that became majrur because it's the object of the preposition. The next example they gave us is Ayyu Yawmin Hadha. Ayyu Yawmin Hadha. Which day is this? Yani somebody wants to say, what is today? In Arabic you say Ayyu Yawmin Hadha. Which day is this? What day is this? Okay? Naam, Yawm al-Ahad. Okay, here in terms of grammatic analysis, Ayyu is a word in Arabic which means which, and the word following Ayyu is always connected to it in what we call idafa. So we say Ayyu Yawmin, Yawmin we say it's mudafun ilayhi majrur. In any case, what's important is because it's following the word Ayyu, it has to be majrur. And the sign that it's majrur is that it takes kasra, a single kasra or double kasra. Doesn't matter, but it has to take kasra. Which day is this? The last example he gave us, Ayyu Shahrin Hadha. Same example, different words. Which month is this? Again, the word that follows Ayyu always has to be majrur, genitive case. It has to take kasra. So Ayyu Yawmin, Ayyu Shahrin, yani the word that comes after Ayyu. Has, is that somebody's telephone? Okay. In any case, what we're saying here, what? Is that we have Kitabu Muhammadin, possessor. We have Ayla, as-sariri, following a preposition. And then we have, yani the word that comes after Ayyu, which is mudafun ilayhi, majrur. All of these words are in the genitive case. Yani genitive case in Arabic is called majrur, and sometimes in English they say the possessive case, possessive, because sometimes it's used to show possession. Naam. Naam.
Ayyu come under what category?
Under which category?
Yeah. Like yesterday, I'm not speaking, just saying like different.
No, it's a noun. It's a noun. Ayyu is a noun. Ism istifham. And it's a word that's used to ask a question. Like kayfa, kayfa haluka, okay. Mata, ja'ta, when did you come? Aina, huwa, where is he at? These are question words called ism istifham. So ayyu is an ism istifham. Sometimes it has other functions too, but that's how it's being used here. Yeah, I need to ask a question. Which day or which month is this? Okay, at the end it says, please memorize the above Arabic terms. Which Arabic terms are we talking about? We're talking about primarily marfu'un, mansubun, and majrurun. Yani nominative, accusative, and genitive. And watch carefully the ending vowel signs, meaning the vowel, the fatha, kasra, or dhamma, on nouns to know its function in the sentence. Memorize these Arabic terms, marfu'un, mansubun, and majrur, and pay attention to the vowel on the end of a word. Is it fatha, kasra, or dhamma? If it's fatha, we know that it is mansub. If it's kasra, we know that it is majrur. And if it's dhamma, we know that it is marfu'un. Okay, inshallah, next week we're going to look at this lesson again. and maybe take a few minutes to go over it a little bit more. And if you have questions between now and then, make a note of them so when you come to class at 12 o'clock, and you try to come a little before 12, so you have time to pray 2 rak'ah, tahiyatul masjid, and get yourself organized so we can start exactly at 12 o'clock and get as much time in as possible before the salat. Try to come a little bit earlier, if possible. It's very important that Muslims are timely. And we have to pray 5 times a day, every day, throughout the year, throughout our life, until we die, on time. We have to pray 5 times a day on time. We should be the most timely, punctual people in the earth. Please try to come on time. I know that sometimes the traffic, the parking, there's all kind of different things. The trains are not running on schedule, buses, whatever it might be. I understand that, believe me. But I'm saying, let's do the best we can. Our intent should be to be early. Please, let's strive. Work hard. Be diligent. Take this seriously. And ask Allah's help. Ask Allah's help. Don't think you can do this by yourself because you're so smart. It's not like that in real life. It's not like that. Because some of the smartest people in the world, smart meaning they have high IQ, some of these people are mushriks. So the smartness doesn't help when you go into the hellfire. And it's not smartness that makes success. Success is from Allah alone. Ask Allah's help. Work hard and ask Allah's help. May Allah make each of us successful and keep us steadfast until we return to Him in a condition where we are pleasing to Him and pleased with Him. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.